Hi, and welcome to the Island Library Podcast. Welcome to episode 12. I am one of your co-hosts, Jo from Pages of the Moon.
And I'm Laura from Laura Liz Buckley.
And welcome to our podcast. If you're new here, the format, I will say what book I've read and then read the blurb, and then Laura will go ahead and do the same, and then I will dissect my book with a conclusion, giving the seashell rating and then the all important question, and then we'll flip over to Laura. We also do a small pitch, so a condensed version of what we really enjoyed from the book, in the hopes of twisting the other person's arm to also listen to the book. So that is how this operates.
What did you read this week?
I read Truly Devious by Maureen Johnson.
Oh, I've seen good things about that.
I'm very excited to delve in. What did you read this week?
I read Normal People by Sally Rooney.
Ooh, exciting times.
It is exciting times.
Just before we get into the nitty gritty, I just wanted to say a huge shout out to two new Patreon subscribers, Jenny E and Squarehead. Thank you so much for lovingly supporting us. If you weren't aware that we have a Patreon, you can find us at patreon.com/theislandlibrary. If that, it will be in the show notes.
Right. Yeah. So do you want to kick off with the blurb of your book?
Yes. So this is the blurb of Truly Devious by Maureen Johnson. Elegham Academy is a famous private school in Vermont, founded by an early 20th century tycoon for the best and brightest students around. When Ellingham's wife and daughter were kidnapped, the only clue was a mocking riddle listing methods of murder, signed with the frightening pseudonym Truly Devious. Their disappearance became one of the great unsolved crimes in history. Many years later, true crime aficionado Stevie Bell is set to begin her first year at the academy, and she's determined to solve this cold case. That is, she will solve it when she gets a grip on her demanding new school life and her housemates, the inventor, the novelist, the actor, the artist, and the jokester. But Truly Devious makes a surprise return. The past has crawled out of his grave and someone has gotten away with murder.
Ooh.
Yeah. I did try to snip it down, but it was quite hot, but I'll get into that when I dissect. So I'm handing the baton over to yourself.
Wonderful stuff. So the blurb for Normal People. Connell and Marianne grow up in the same small town in the west of Ireland, but the similarities end there. In school, Connell is popular and well-liked, while Marianne is a loner. But when the two strike up a conversation, awkward but electrifying, something life-changing begins. Normal People is a story of mutual fascination, friendship, and love. It takes us from that first conversation to the years beyond, in the company of two people who try to stay apart, but find they can't.
Ah, I do love Sally Rooney.
Have you read Normal People?
I haven't. I read Conversations with Friends.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to read Normal People, so I'd be really interested to hear what you have to say. It's going to be quite an interesting episode this week because we've both got a book. The other one's been eyeing up. Let's go over to my pitch. I really wanted to rhyme then and be like, my pitch, bitch. So this is my pitch. Many years after an unsolved kidnapping and murder by pseudonym Truly Devious, Ellingham Academy, a private school for the best and brightest, invites Stevie Bell to attend. Stevie, who has an interest in true crime, is determined to solve the case. But when a classmate is found dead in a seemingly odd accident, Stevie begins to wonder if Truly Devious has come back again.
Okay.
I just want to start off by saying that this is a trilogy. I will be mainly only discussing the first book. I may make some mentions to the other books, but non-spoilery, okay. But only because I feel like it answers a lot of the things that people struggle with, so to speak, with the first book. So the plot of this book is quite easy. It's been explained very well by the blurb and hopefully by my pitch. But Ellingham Academy is a school literally for the best. So you submit an application and they take sort of the unique. So in Stevie's year, she's got her best friend Janelle. She's met her through the academy, not best friends prior, who is an inventor, and also just for background detail, she's also a lesbian, which was, I was so excited when I found that out. There is Nate, who is a writer who sold a bestseller for his first book and he needs to work on the second book. There's a YouTuber who made a fantastic series about zombies, and then there's Ellie, who's an artist, and then there's also a man called David, who is he's the jokester. I think I've covered everybody. So they're the six housemates in Stevie's house. They all individually get signed up for classes, and none of the classes are really the same. They're tailored. So it's a very specific sort of academy. Definitely not something we are used to in England. I can't comment on how realistic this sort of thing is because English education is nothing like this. You do get to pick a select few subjects, but they're still from a handful, whereas they seem very tailored for each person. So there's that to consider. It does seem very... It sort of gave me Dark Academia meets Hogwarts vibes, if that makes sense. You know, like when you first read Harry Potter and you're like, oh my God, these are really exciting classes. It's a bit like that because Stevie gets signed up to like loads of crime and anatomy. And obviously there are other people in the class with her, but it's just like they're not the same classes that Janelle goes to as the best friend because she's an inventor. So it's all very weird. There's passes that they have to use. I'm just sort of giving the background of the first bit of the book, really. They have passes that let them in everywhere, but there's no cameras, which is very bizarre for a really big academy. And the thing to really mention that has this whole fantastic feel about it is Ellingham Academy was built purely so that Ellingham could educate people. He specifically did it to get the best and the brightest. It wasn't like a house that you then turn into a school. It was always intended to be that way. Mm-hmm. And he used to host parties. So there's obviously the main building, which I think he used to live in. And then he would host parties and there'd still be students around. But he's built in loads of secret passageways. Which sounds absolutely amazing until, you know, a murder happens. And obviously, so far, not really spoiling anything except the first couple stuff you'd learn like right at the beginning. Basically, just to give you background information of how his wife and daughter were kidnapped, they went on a drive, something happened, but there was a young student who got caught up in it and she also died. You don't know what happened to the wife and daughter. But obviously this was years and years ago. It does make reference a lot of the time to, because this sort of, the story sort of run at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you get more information as it goes along. But the murder kidnapping happened in 1936. That's basically as much as I am trying to say about the book without giving too much away. So I'm going to start with the thing that crops up the most for me that I feel like people might turn away from this book, but something I actually really enjoyed was the pacing of the book. I had a quick scan after I'd finished the whole trilogy to see, I always do that, I don't know if anybody else does that, but I like to have a look to see if other people agreed with me. And the thing that I kept seeing people mention was that in the first book they felt like the pacing was off. As somebody who really loved the pacing, I wanted to explain why I love the pacing of it. Now with a trilogy, you don't want to give too much away if you've planned three other books. But what I really liked about this is that something gets wrapped up in each one, but the main plot doesn't. Mm-hmm. It extends through the three books. So if anyone's going to read and think, oh, I read the first one, I don't know whether to give the second one a go, it does have a very similar setup through all three in terms of there's obviously the big thing that Stevie's gone there to figure out, and then the smaller issues. Then they all, in my opinion, they all got wrapped up really, really nicely how each thing fell into place, is all I will say. So obviously we've got to be really, really careful. But I really loved the pacing because it kept you engaged. Now, the thing is, I don't read a lot of crime or mystery. So for me, picking up this book and being as invested as I was, to the point that I read all three books within a day and a bit. I literally started this Friday night and I finished it Sunday dinner time.
Wow.
I was literally so invested to the point that I downloaded Truly Devious because I had been eyeing it for a while and I thought, you know what, I'm going to give it a go. It's still young adult. It's not adult. So maybe it's adult crime mystery that I have an issue with and not young adult. So I gave it a go. Literally, I was half through the book and I ordered the next one because I didn't know it was a trilogy. I thought it was a duology because it was on the ebook. It just said the next book. So I just thought it was a duology. Mm-hmm. So I quickly ordered them both from my local Waterstones and literally begged my husband to go and take me to pick them up Saturday morning, to which then I'd already finished the first book as an ebook because I was just drinking it all up. And so then I started the second book on the Saturday, and then I was literally finished that, like, because I had bits of other things to do, and then realized, because it ended again on a cliffhanger, and I was literally like, what? And then realized the third one, thankfully it had already come out this year, but only in hardback, which wasn't available in my local store, so I had to get that Prime delivered to me on Sunday for me to finish it. But yeah, I literally just couldn't put it down. I don't know. There's so many things that I really loved about this book. I loved the pacing. I loved that we were drip fed a lot of stuff about the characters. I really liked the, like I said, dark academia feel that we got from the academy itself, but also the secret tunnels and the mischievousness of teenagers was really, really exciting. I liked that the way in which all of these people sort of were put together was actually really cleverly thought out, that they're all very different. And obviously I can only comment really on the representation in terms of being bisexual, but there is also a character called Vi who prefers to go by they and them. When I read through it, I did notice that Stevie was corrected when Stevie called Vi a she, and Janelle, her soon-to-be girlfriend, was like, they use they and them. But I didn't notice that crop up so much again, and I don't fully remember if the pronouns got swapped by accident at times. Mm-hmm. But I know it definitely didn't happen in the other books, but I can't comment on the first book so much. But when I read through some of the comments about this book, it did come up. So just be aware of that, because I kept thinking back to myself, did that happen? But unfortunately, I probably would have just got lost in the story to not notice. But I wanted to make a comment about it because I didn't want to like breeze over it. Mm. I will put my hands up and say I might not have noticed, but I'm also a very quick reader, and I was really, really needing to know what was going off. There was a romance in it, which I didn't expect. You sort of see them paired up quite closely, but it's an odd romance in the fact that you, A, don't expect it to happen, in a sense, because of the way in which Stevie is as a character. But I wouldn't say it was out of character. It just wasn't what I was expecting as the author built Stevie up. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really well thought out, and it wasn't a typical will they, won't they, and it wasn't a typical friends to enemies to lovers either. It was clever, but I can see why if you picked it up you might feel uncomfortable with the romance being there. Not uncomfortable, that's the wrong word, but just a bit like, huh? Because when there was like a scene that happens, and obviously that's when it first presents itself, but I was literally like, wait, what? And then I had to really slow down and really digest what was going on, because it's not really what I had expected from the book. But I wouldn't say it was something that I didn't want. Once it was shown to me, I was like, yeah, give me the romance. If I'm here, give it me. And I did like how it was handled as the books progressed as well. I thought it was very natural and also very, very different. And I thought it was really clever by Maureen, because so many young adult romances are all very sickly sweet, where this was literally, they would antagonise each other. And it was very, very normal teen. Like, you might have a cheeky kiss, not really know where it leads, so then you antagonise each other. And then you kind of shifty around each other, and everybody else knows something's going off, but no one wants to make a point of saying anything. It was very like that. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it, because you don't get that representation often in books. Because sometimes in young adult books, what happens is the characters seem so adult-like in the how they handle a relationship that it becomes very difficult to remember that they're still teens. And what I liked about this book series itself is that at no point do you forget that Stevie is a teenager. You never forget her age in the way that she handles things. Yes, she's very Nancy Drew, I think is the reference they make, but again, I wouldn't know if she's like Nancy Drew or not, because I don't read crime. But I just thought she knew what she wanted, and she was very quirky. All of the characters are very quirky actually, which I think is why I really softened to them. But when it's something she's really passionate about, she's very serious, and I liked that, because that tends to be what a teenager is like. Like, I remember I seemed weird to lots of other people, but if you got me talking about, say, a book, I'd be super serious. You can't make a joke out of the book. That is my child. What are you doing? So I really, really liked that.
I like the way that you say that, as if that's not weird. Because, I mean, I totally get it. You'd be like, oh, yeah, I'd be totally weird until you get me talking about a book. And then, you know, you speak ill of that book and you're talking about my family.
Yeah. But it's true though, isn't it? Because I only know this because my husband's not a reader. So when I get really passionate about a book and he starts to give me those crazy eyes, like, you need to calm down, that's when I realise that I'm going a little bit off key and I need to just bring myself back down to the ground a little bit. Another thing that I thought was really, really clever was the academy itself is built literally up a mountain. Like, it's literally in the middle of nowhere. There is a village, but the way in which you learn this is that Stevie's been dropped off by her parents, but her parents are really put out because they can't drive her directly to the school. They can only drive them so far up, and then they have to, I think it's like a carriage. They have to take a carriage up the rest of the way. So her parents are a bit like, what the hell is this? But her parents are also just remarkable in the sense that you get this feel, because obviously you're introduced to them at the same time as you're introduced to Stevie, that they literally have no idea why their daughter's been picked for this school. They do not understand Stevie, and Stevie knows that they don't understand her either, to the point that they're just wanting her to get a boyfriend and like be prom queen, stuff that they understand. They don't understand any of this crime stuff. The only thing her parents and her seem to be on the same sort of lines on is that she's on medication for panic attacks or anxiety, which I was a little bit disappointed it's not really dug into more. I just felt like it was something added to the character to humanise her a little bit. But that would have been really interesting to see delved into. And I will say, I didn't get much more information about it over the course of the three books. I felt like sometimes it was just a plot device just used to bring other people involved or show her receiving some form of compassion from people. But it didn't really taint the story. It's just something I noticed. And I was a bit like, ugh, because I've got anxiety and I want representation. I'm going to hand out a justice.
Oh.
Justice for Janelle.
Okay.
Mainly because I feel like she was really underused. We got this really feisty inventor female who was an absolute boss, and she's a lesbian, and then there's this developing relationship with Vi, who uses they and them pronouns, and they're just only there when it's needed to be there. I mean, she does crop up a little bit more in the next two books, but I feel like she was just heavily underused, really. She was there as the best friend, and Stevie didn't really rely on her all that much. There is like a weird moment where, and I can't remember which book it happens in, so I do apologise, but they don't fall out, but obviously you can tell that the distance between them has caused a bit of an issue, but neither of them really talk about it either. Which, when I was explaining it to somebody, I was like, actually, I really like that they don't really talk about it, because girls don't. You either talk about it and have a huge fight, or you just, both of you are just stepping around the other one, like, will we say anything? No, I'm not going to, she's not. And then it just sort of become okay. So I actually did like that that happened. But that's really it. In terms of her characterisation, it was very lacklustre in the first book, but she does get a bit more development throughout the series, but not a hell of a lot, not for how she was set up right at the beginning. But I would say that all of the other side characters do get an equal measure of representation and story, if that makes sense. So maybe that was a particular choice, and maybe we're just so used to having the main character and her best friend being of equal sort of measure, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I just obviously wanted to mention that. I really, really did love Stevie. Like, I think she is a character that I really warmed to. But I just got to make a mention to Nate, who is the novelist who wrote the bestseller and was literally accepted to this academy because his book was so good. He is a creative person, but he's in such crisis. He's literally like, I can't write.
Aww.
And when I was reading the first book, I was literally like, he is a mood. Anyone who's a writer, just download it as a Kindle book and then just put Nate's name in it and hear everything he says. He's so dry, he won't take a compliment from anybody. He's like sort of self-loathing, but in a way that's not annoying. Doesn't want a hug, doesn't want anything. It's only when Stevie, I think, I won't say too much, but Stevie makes him do something that purposely takes him away from writing his second book, that he begins writing his second book. And I think that that is exactly what being a writer is like. Once you sit down, you're like, right, I'm gonna write, you can't do it. But the moment you're like, I need to do this, you suddenly all you want to do is write. And I just felt like that was just so perfect that I just needed to mention it. Book one and book two both end on cliffhangers, but not crime cliffhangers per se. Very interesting. I won't say much more, but I was very satisfied with the ending. I just really, really loved the book. I don't feel like I say that very often about crime or mystery books. I thought the drippings of information we get in the first book about the original murder / kidnapping kept me interested, but I quickly became interested in the present situation that was happening. And when that sort of wrapped up-ish, I was still satisfied if that was the ending of that. But thankfully, it was re-picked back up in book two, which then led into book three. So it's all of it's really well thought out and really fleshed out, in my opinion. And it's sort of, even though they're a trilogy, I would say the book is just one huge book. I don't feel like you'd read book one and go, that was really satisfying, I don't need to read the others. A bit like, I'm trying to think of a good example. But you know when you could read a book and it had still a satisfying ending, but it was part of a series? I don't feel like this can be satisfying on its own. Even if you read it like, I'm going to read this book today, you would then still need to read the next one, because I feel like you have that thing in you. Oh, God, I just need to know what happens, even though you've already read it before. Which actually is really a big credit to Maureen, I think. And I just couldn't put it down. No one could talk to me. And if anyone messaged me, I was actually like, why are you talking to me? I don't know how much this is real, but I wanted to make a note because we've talked about John and Hank Green before. But apparently she's the secret sister. I think she did some stuff with them. I know she's collaborated with John in the past.
Yeah. The thing is, if I'm remembering rightly, way, way back when their YouTube channel and the project they were doing was Brotherhood 2.0, they had to make videos back and forth on a specific schedule. At first it was every weekday, and then it was not every weekday anymore. But then when one of them couldn't do it for a while, I think it was maybe when John's first kid was born or something like that, so he was away, Maureen did his videos for a while, which is why I think... where the secret sister thing comes from. That she became one of the vlog brothers, but obviously because she's female, she was a vlog sister.
I thought it might be something like that. So, yeah, I don't think I've really got a proper conclusion like I normally do, because I feel like the conclusion is the other two books, if that makes sense.
Sure.
As a series, I really, really loved it. I don't want to give away the answer to the question already, but I just thought it was really clever. I thought it was, you could tell it was really thought out. The writing was so good that at times I just wanted to just eat all of the words. Like, I just didn't want to break from reading it. And I remember getting the second book, and obviously my husband looked over at me because I was sat on the sofa with him, and he was like, oh, she's only right at the beginning. And then I think he looked like an hour later and he was like, what the hell? So I was through it. I mean, it's not, the books look and appear chunky, but actually upon looking inside, the font's not small, and I mean, yeah, it's not small and it doesn't fill the entire page, but yeah, it's a very easy read. An enjoyable easy read. Not easy because it's like basic, but just easy because it's just really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So my seashell rating, I would give this book, it's a 5.
Ooh. Which then leads us on to, would you take Truly Devious to your island library?
I would.
Yay!
I would have to take... So I think I'm going to use the same rule as that you had with the other one and take all three, but they're just one book.
Take the trilogy.
Because, yeah, take the trilogy. I mean, I fully, fully recommend this book. If you have been sat on the fence about it, please give it a read, because it was just so clever. There are just so many little things. There's probably things that I even missed that I think I would get on further reading of it. But I just thought it was really clever that we didn't get the nice wrap up, and in the sense that the events that happen in the first book do have an impact on the other books. And I did like that. I thought it was really clever that there's this umbrella plot, but then there's these minor plots underneath that all sort of affect, and the relationships that each character has and the feelings they have about other people affect the plot of the book. And yeah, I just really, really enjoyed it. I was very excited to talk about it. The only thing that I don't like, right, is that I now have 2 paperbacks and a hardback. That frustrates me.
Yeah.
But that's not the book's fault. That's just the world's fault, because my bookshop stopped selling hardbacks once the paperback comes out. I think obviously for space. And obviously paperbacks must sell a little bit better. But now I've got like a set that doesn't match, and that frustrates me. But yeah, that has no impact on my feelings about the book. That's just something I wanted to mention. That was Truly Devious. A fantastic read, and very happy to add it to my island library.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. I will have to pick that up, I think.
I know you were interested in reading it before, but has my pitch and discussion further swayed you?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
that sounds really interesting. It sounds like a fun read.
Yeah, you can get really lost up in it. I feel like that's a really good way to describe it. It has a magical feel to it, even though it's not magical, because it takes you on a proper trip. Yeah,
but cool.
That was Truly Devious by Maureen Johnson. Thank you, Maureen, for writing such a wicked series.
Right, on to Me and Normal People by Sally Rooney. So my pitch for Normal People: Connell and Marianne come from different worlds. They overlap only occasionally at school and when Connell picks his mum up from her job cleaning Marianne's house. But despite the social distance between them, something draws these two together, not just once, but over and over again. Normal People is a quiet, thoughtful, emotionally intense story of young people trying to find their way in the world and their way around each other.
Oh, intriguing.
So I have also read Conversations with Friends. And I thought it was fine. I thought the writing was good, but honestly, the main character wound me up and I found it kind of aimless. So I wanted to read Normal People because I was interested in how much other people seem to love it. But after reading Conversations with Friends, I thought maybe this is just an author whose style does not mesh with me. Because I thought it was technically very good, but it just, between the characters and the style of kind of, it's quite low on plot, or felt that way to me, it didn't grab me. So I was kind of interested to read Normal People, but I was expecting to feel the same about it. And although I can see similarities, Normal People grabbed me so much more than Conversations with Friends. It's not the kind of book that I would say I enjoyed reading, because it's frequently quite depressing. It's very pensive. It's very, it's hard to work out how to describe it. I appreciated it. I got sucked into it. I got invested in the characters. It's not fun, but it's very interesting. And I think it's very well constructed and well written. There are the occasional slightly odd, she's got a bit of a thing about describing inhales and exhales very specifically, which when you're reading it, if you get too caught up in it, you try and imagine what that actually, how that would work to breathe in the way that she's describing, then you kind of feel like, what? Which is, that's a bit nitpicky. To be honest, it didn't bother me in the moment. It was only as I was like trying to unpick some of it that I thought, does that even make sense as a way of breathing?
I did notice that actually in Conversations with Friends, they have a very specific out sigh. You know, it's a very like, and I was just like, surely that drains their lungs of all air.
Yeah. So like I said, it didn't actually bother me that much while I was reading it just to read it. It was when I was kind of unpicking it a bit more that I was thinking that's a bit of an odd choice. The author picks out a lot of very specific details. That's just one example. A lot of the time I think it works really well. The nature of the book, so to back up a little bit, you've got two main characters, Connell and Marianne, and we alternate perspectives between the two from chapter to chapter. It's not first person, it's kind of close-ish third person. And we also, between chapters, skip some time. So it could be anything from a few days to several months that we are moving from chapter to chapter. So you're seeing this story that plays out from the very beginning when they are in school and they bump into each other as Connell's picking up his mum, who is a cleaner for Marianne's family. And they have this slightly awkward conversation because they're from completely different social spheres at school. She is an outcast and he's quite popular. But you get the sense that when they're one-on-one, they've got more in common than maybe they would have assumed. They're obviously both quite smart. They're both thoughtful. But she seems socially off in a way that he finds both bemusing and slightly intriguing. She's very straightforward. She'll just sort of say stuff that occurs to her, which he finds interesting. But something that becomes apparent from very early on, which is what's really interesting about the shifting perspectives, is that they both have this interpretation of the other one that does not match at all with how the other one sees themselves, which I think is the moment I started to see it. I thought that this is exactly how relationships in the real world work, right? We have these ideas about each other and we kind of construct these ideas of how the people around us think and feel based on how we see them acting. We sort of create this model of the people that we know, which matches the data that we've collected about them. But because we're not in their heads, we have no idea how they actually feel a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I feel like this book did a beautifully thorough job of making that abundantly clear. And even to the point where there are things that happen that the two of them remember completely differently. One of them in their point of view chapter will be thinking about a conversation that they had and they'll think that one thing was said. And then the other person, when you next get to their point of view, if they're reflecting on it, you'll be like, that's not what they think happened at all. They think you said something completely different. And they're obviously both convinced that their memory is accurate. And as the reader, you have no way of knowing where the truth lies between those. So just from a kind of character and relationship study point of view, I thought it was a fascinating book. I think the dynamic that played out between the two characters was really interesting. The way that they grow and the way that their relationship evolves over time. They're both quite layered. And, you know, you see at first you could quite easily paint them as the outcast and the jock sort of stereotype because Connell's like a football player at school. But that's not all there is to them at all, because he's also very sensitive and thoughtful, although doesn't always know how to act on that side of himself, especially when he's a young guy. And although Marianne seems like she doesn't care, she's eh about all the social stuff, you find that she's sort of... It's not that she wants to be popular, but when she gets little tastes of it, she seems to find it fascinating and is really intrigued by the idea of popularity.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, so I actually... It is clear in the book that it spans several years. But when I started reading, I tend to not really read blurbs right before I start reading a book because I kind of want to go in without any preconceived ideas as much as possible, says the person making a book podcast for other people to hear my in-depth thoughts about a book before I hopefully encourage them to buy it for themselves.
I do the same, though. I do the same. I can't remember what book it was, but it was a book. And I actually didn't realise the main character was male until like 3 chapters in. And I was like, I didn't think he was male. And then when I read the blurb, it was very obvious that they were male.
But yeah, so obviously the blurb makes it clear that it's going to span several years. But when I started reading it, I fell into the sort of the school years. And they're talking about these upcoming exams. And in my head, I thought, oh, OK, so these exams are going to be what everything builds towards. That's sort of the end point of the school year. And we're going to see everything play out in the months between now and the exams, because they weren't like imminent at the start of the book. And then a few chapters in, it's like the exams were done, moving on. And I was like, oh, OK, suddenly they're young adults at uni. OK, I mean, I'm up for it. It wasn't what I was expecting. But you see quite a massive shift in their characters when they you see a massive shift in their social status and the way they interact with the world when they get to uni, which is so often the case, isn't it? Like, people who don't find their place at school sometimes really find their group at uni, and that definitely happens to Marianne, whereas Connell finds himself a little bit more on the back foot at uni. He can't quite work out where his place is there, so that's an interesting reversal. One thing that I was expecting to play out more was the wealth disparity between them, because that is, it's very obvious at the beginning. I mean, Connell's mum is literally cleaning Marianne's house.
Yeah.
There are a few comments about her having like a really nice house and about Connell's family being quote unquote like a bad family or not having kind of the same status in the community that Marianne's family has. And while it does come up, I'm not going to say that it gets completely ignored. It certainly doesn't seem to play out to the extent that I would expect, I guess. So there are definitely situations that come up in the book where I thought they would probably have different attitudes to money and finances. And sometimes it was touched on, but it didn't get explored in the way that I would have expected.
Did you sort of expect the fact that he didn't grow up with money come into effect more with her having grown up with money?
I would have thought, yeah, that there would be even more small instances of, you know, of her spending in a way that he might think of as frivolous and it not being a big deal to her because she's always had money. There are so many things that come up in a relationship where the two people have grown up with different expectations around money and finances, and it doesn't have to be a massive row or anything, but it is a point of minor tension that comes up over the course of a friendship or a romantic relationship. And I just thought it would have been so interesting to see it come up more, but I felt like it was addressed occasionally but not brought back in a way that felt consistent enough to match what I would have expected, I guess.
Yeah, because finances and money is like a huge conversation you have to have in a relationship, like what you said, like whether that's a friendship or a romantic relationship, if you're in close proximity to one another and one person has grown up with, not, I wouldn't say like poor, because poor is the wrong word, but you know, like they couldn't buy everything they ever wanted, they could just buy the occasional thing, and then you've got somebody who can just buy whatever they want and not have to think about it. Yeah, that's like a huge conversation that happens, and it can be a huge make or break situation. So I do get what you mean. It's just, it's been glossed over as something that's not a big impact on people, but actually it does. It has huge consequences if not discussed as well.
And there's so much emotionally wrapped up in it. To somebody who's used to having money and is relaxed about money, they can either feel very self-conscious about the way they spend, or if they just have no awareness of it because they never had to think about it, then they can end up looking like they're just either showing off or like they're careless with money. And then people who are used to being more careful with money can end up, other people perceiving them as like ungenerous or like they're obsessed with it, and that can be a thing that other people look at and be like, well, why are you freaking out so much about it? I know, just I've seen it play out in so many different ways, and considering so much was made of it at the beginning in terms of the setup for the story, I guess I was just expecting it to be a more central element of their dynamic than it ended up being.
Yeah,
I felt very protective of Marianne a lot of the time. She comes from quite a difficult home background, although obviously she was financially well off. There were some massive emotional fault lines in her house, and there is some reference to sort of emotional abuse and violence, references that are made throughout the story. And she seems to not know what to do with her own vulnerability a huge amount of the time. That becomes kind of a recurring thing in her relationships. So my heart absolutely ached for her a lot of the time, especially early on when Connell is more clueless and doesn't know whether he's hurting her or not. He just sort of assumes that everything's fine because she's not saying when she feels vulnerable or when she might be hurt a lot of the time. So he's just assuming that everything must be fine. And I'm there like, no, you don't understand. She's so sad inside. Be nice to her.
Do you ever find out why she's the outcast? Or is it just like something that she just is and it's just accepted as part of the story? It's just because I was just interested. But obviously if it's a huge plot point, then obviously don't.
No, it's not. It's not a huge plot point. You do get little snippets of seeing her interact with people, and you get the sense that she just doesn't really know how to interact with people her age. She doesn't fall naturally into the sort of social patterns that everyone expects of each other at that age, and so she is on the outs, and everyone thinks she's a weirdo. It's pretty much as simple right, and as complicated as that. And then it just so happens that as she grows up, she finds her place more. And, you know, when people grow up, they tend to be more accepting of those variations in social interaction anyway. I think people tend to be more open to people who don't like the exact same stuff as everyone else or think in the exact same way as everyone else. You tend to find a bit more acceptance there. And I think that's what happens with her. There is a scene quite early on there where they're in a nightclub type situation and Marianne is assaulted. It's a quote unquote small version of assault. Like, she's not dragged into an alley or anything. It happens in front of all her friends. It's played off as a joke by the guy that does it and by everyone who sees it. The writing doesn't make all that much of it, but you really feel her confusion and the sort of shame of it for her. I think it was really well handled within the story, because while you have a lot of people who are like, God, he was just kidding around, get over it, you also have people who are like, that's not okay. If she wants to leave, then she can leave. Don't make out like she's overreacting here, which I thought was really nice to have that balance. There are some absolutely beautiful lines and turns of phrase. Usually when describing something sad, because there are a lot of sad moments as these characters try and fail to understand each other and themselves over the course of the story. One thing that did bug me a bit is it can be difficult to keep track of time within sections. So between chapters, you get these skips, but also within a chapter or within a section, the characters will flash back to things that have happened since you last saw them.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because we're kind of honing on a moment and then getting the context for that moment, and then you'll skip to the next big moment and then get the context for that moment. But it did occasionally make me feel like, where are we exactly?
Yeah, I can imagine that was quite difficult to grasp, because you're only expecting it to happen at the chapter points and then it's happening within the sections.
Yeah, the time jumps between the sections feel like they get longer the further you go. I didn't track that precisely, so I don't know how well that would bear up if you actually looked at them, but it felt like you got bigger jumps, which can leave you a bit disorientated. But I think that's deliberate, because you also, it feels like the further you go, the wider the gap in understanding between these two main characters gets, and the more they struggle to find their way back to the kind of initial kernel of understanding that they found when they first had a real conversation with each other. So I thought that played out in a really interesting way. It's one of those books that doesn't do speech marks. I assume Conversations with Friends is like that too, but I don't actually remember. So obviously that gives it a kind of stream of consciousness vibe that, you're going to find out for us.
Yes, I just got to find out. Yes, they don't.
Yeah.
That is so weird. How did I not notice this before either? Okay, yeah, let's break that down. Let's talk about that.
So between that and the fact that it's written in present tense. There is a real kind of immediacy to it.
Just reading that one bit of Conversations with Friends then, just to get what you were talking about, it's almost like you're being told it, in the sense that, you know, if I met you for a coffee, or like I'm talking to you now and I'm describing the scene to you, I'll just, like, this little bit here, I smiled like she was joking while she looked at some papers then put them aside. I wonder about you, she said, you don't seem to have a plan. So it's like I'm telling you, oh, she, then she said, oh, I wonder about you, she said, you don't seem to have a plan. So I don't know if that's, but I think probably why I didn't notice it so much in this, and I probably would have noticed it more in yours, is because this is in first person.
Yeah, the fact that this is in third person, the combination of third person and present tense is kind of interesting, because obviously first person is usually your go-to if you're trying to get a reader right in the character's head, and present tense feels like the tense version of that. You know, you're right in the moment with the characters. Third person, present tense, has a simultaneously distancing effect and the effect of having you right there in the moment. It's sort of, so when I first started reading it, I sort of thought, okay, I don't know whether I'm in it or not, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely, it took me a paragraph or two to tune into it. And then when I hit the dialogue without punctuation, without, not without punctuation, it's got commas and stuff, without speech marks, that, yeah, it's just, it's an interesting combination of techniques, I guess. I don't know if I feel like I can put my finger on the effect it had. It certainly, I'm just going to go back to stream of consciousness. It feels very like you are in the middle of a flow of thoughts. The fact that it's third person puts a strange filter on that experience, because you're not in either Connell or Marianne's thoughts, which is what it would feel a little bit more intuitive, I think, if it was in the first person, present tense, no speech marks. You're like, you're just right in their head experiencing the story as they are. I think the third person made it clearer, especially with the skipping between times. Maybe that distance allowed for more clarity around what was going on. Maybe it also encourages you, because you're switching between these two perspectives, maybe the third person encourages you to remember that neither is absolutely true. I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I have mixed feelings about it as a technique. The present tense is not my favourite to read, and the lack of speech marks I can take or leave. There's a part of me that wants to roll my eyes at it as a gimmick. That's probably really unfair. It's not like anything is taken away by the fact that they're not there. It doesn't make it any harder to read. But yeah, I don't know. It all feels very literary, I guess. And maybe I'm just a cynic. And I'm like, oh, I see, we're being very literary, are we, with our present tense, lack of speech marks, very high concept. No, I thought it was good. I thought it was well written, despite my confusion initially over the perspective situation. Yeah. And like I said, I wouldn't say I enjoyed it, because that would imply that like it was too complicated and at times wrenching to be a pleasant reading experience. But I think it was a powerful reading experience. And I would recommend it, but not if you want something fluffy and fun, not if you want something that's going to make you smile. It was funny at points. It definitely made me laugh, but it's a book for if you want to really sit and think about the characters and you want to go on a journey with the characters and you're prepared for the fact that it might rip your heart out once or twice.
Right, okay. Fair warnings.
In terms of seashell rating, I'm going to give it a 4. I'm just debating whether to give it another half. No, I'm going to give it a 4. I really liked it. I'm not going to edge any further towards loved it, although I liked it so much more than I was expecting to, which also was fun. And I really like those characters. I worry for them. Even now, when I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh, I hope they're okay out there.
I'm going to ask you 2 questions. So okay. The first one I'm going to ask you is, does it make you want to watch the Netflix show?
It definitely intrigues me. Yeah. Is it on Hulu or BBC or something?
It might be. I might have just said Netflix and that's incorrect. Would it make you want to watch the TV show?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was just thinking, because if it's on Netflix, then I'll watch it now, because I have Netflix. But yeah, no, definitely I'm interested in watching it. I've heard a few people say that they like it better than the book. I feel like there's a lot that you can do with, because obviously as I was reading it, I knew the TV adaptation existed. So occasionally I was thinking about like, how are you going to have this play out? Because so much of it is about the internal feelings and conflict of the characters. But I assume because people are rating it so highly that the actors are doing a really good job of conveying what's going on. I don't know if there's narration, which would help as well. But yeah, I'm definitely interested to see how it played out on the screen. And I enjoyed the story enough that I'd be happy to go through it again in another medium. I might even read it. That makes it sound like I'm never going to touch it. I probably will read it again one day, but just not imminently.
Would you take it to your island library?
No, I wouldn't. Not because it's not good, because it is good. It's very good. It's probably technically better than some of the books that I have chosen to take to the library, but it's just not something that I'm going to want to read over and over and over again. I would go back to it because it's interesting and because I think, because like I said, I think it's technically got a lot of interesting things to unpack. I think the way that Sally Rooney has constructed her characters in this is really fascinating. The main ones anyway, some of the other ones are a little bit two-dimensional, but everything is played out through the lens of these two characters anyway, so that didn't bother me. But yeah, so I would definitely read it again in my life, but I'm not going to want to read it.
Let it take up a spot.
Yeah, it's not one of my top 10.
Yeah. Interesting.
Do you think you will read Normal People after my slightly rambling back and forth?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on the fence anyway. I did really enjoy Conversations with Friends. There were things that I disliked, but that wasn't to do with her writing, but I feel like that's just the plot itself. I feel Sally, as a writer, just from having read the back of Normal People when I purchased it for you.
I was going to say... The only reason I have this is because it was a birthday present, which...
So I picked it up because I knew that when we talked about Conversation with Friends, you said that you would really want to give Normal People a go. So I read the back of it and I had a little flick, like, on the first page. And what I feel like she does really well is that she puts you in a situation that she knows you shouldn't like. Like, she purposely writes a story that makes you feel conflicted by the end of it. Which I feel like is probably why some people like her and don't like her and don't know where to place her books, because I loved Conversations with Friends, but I didn't like the topic, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
I like her writing. I like the way that she puts you in these situations that you shouldn't like what's going off, but yet you keep reading. It's a bit like when you watch trash TV, you know you shouldn't like it. Not saying she's trash, but that's what I mean. Yeah. It's like that guilty sort of pleasure, but it's not that. It's a situation that, like you're saying about Normal People, is it's sad. So it's you saying then you enjoyed it. It's like you saying that you're enjoying people's misery and their confusion and their aimless wandering. And it's like with Conversations with Friends, it's basically like saying you enjoy an affair. And you're not saying any of those things, but I feel like it makes it, she puts you in an awkward position in whether to say that you enjoy it. So a roundabout way, I'm going to say yes. I would really, really, it's been on my list, and definitely listening to you discuss it and knowing that you enjoyed it far more, it's definitely intrigued me in wanting to read it. Not 100% sure about TV show. I feel like I get burnt quite a lot about TV shows. So I'm definitely going to give the book a go first and then wait to hear your opinion on the TV show.
Sure. I'll get back to you and let you know.
So, takes us to the all important moment of the podcast. Joe's random question of the week on the crisp new microphone. Okay, this one is really, really, really random. What is your favourite thing in your fridge right now?
Favourite thing in my fridge right now. Okay, I have two answers.
Okay.
Right now, we have a load of Hotel Chocolat caramel chocolate bunnies in there.
Ooh.
Which is unusual. But we got a voucher from my grandparents a while ago, and we finally got the order through. So we are eating our way through a lot. We got the ugly but good, so they're some of the slightly miscast in the chocolate, but they are very tasty, so there's that. But normally I don't have those in my fridge, so normally I'm going to say marmalade, which I also have in my fridge.
Interesting. So mine is Aldi's version of strawberry Müller rice.
I love Müller rice.
Müller rice is my favourite thing. I eat it all the time. And the Aldi version is just as good, but it's just a little bit more creamy.
Mm.
So that's my favourite thing in my fridge.
Okay.
So that was my random question of the week, which I thought was really different.
I really enjoyed that random question.
Yeah. Yeah. So There
what
we go.
What are you reading next week?
I'm not 100% sure, only because I've got a couple of books to look at, and I'm going to see what grabs my fancy, I think. Have you got one lined up?
I've just realised that not really. I've just finished reading Siege and Storm.
Ooh.
So part of me wants to go out and get book three now, but also I have a stack of unread books on my bookshelf that I should probably at least attempt to get to first. So I might read...
I would say go and get the third one, though, because I feel like completing up a series is like a huge bucket list sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can't really leave that hanging for too long.
No.
But I might read The Black Flamingo, which I bought the other day.
Interesting. I have eyed that one up. Okay. And I'll get back to you with whatever I'm going to read. And yeah. That has been episode 12 of the Island Library podcast. Thank you so much for sitting down with me once again, Laura, and discussing books with me.
It was great fun. And thank you to all our listeners and our Patreon supporters. Thanks for tuning in. And we look forward to seeing you next week.
Bye.